Hello and welcome to the Spirit World Center. The following is the Spirit World Center podcast. If you have any questions about the spirits or training, you can visit our website at spiritworldcenter.com. And now, please enjoy the show.
Hello, my friends, and welcome to another episode of Spirit Chat. And I'm so excited to introduce my guest, who's a fellow Canadian, and his name is Eric Lingan, and he is actually has a center up in Northern Canada called Spirit World Center. So I'm really excited to hear what he has to share with us, and I'm going to introduce you now. So Eric, welcome to my show.
Hello, it's so amazing to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, you're so welcome. So question right out of the gate is, can you share with myself and my listeners, what was your world like before you started dabbling into what you're doing now?
Oh my. Well, I really started with spirituality when I was around 12 years old, actually. So I went on a tour of England with my family. And the last day of the tour, we went with a place, I believe it was called Astral Travels. And it was kind of a new agey travel service. And they took us to Avebury Circle, to Glastonbury Tor, and we ended up at the end at Stonehenge. And it was like just a life-changing experience. I remember, you know, they had the dowsing rods, I got my own pair, and we're just walking around the stones, seeing them move. And it's just like, what is going on here? Well, when I got back to Canada, I just delved into it. I was like, there's these ancient secrets out here. I want to find out what's going on. And so that led me to druidry. It led me to Celtic shamanism. That eventually led to just shamanism in general. And so from about the ages of 12 to 17 or so, I was deeply involved in these practices. And of course, it helped that my mother was getting into Buddhism and all these things too. So we went to this local metaphysical store a lot, did tons of workshops. It was pretty awesome. But then when I got to the age of 18, 19, went off to university, got interested in other things, right? And so I kind of turned off that side of my life. Now, fast forward then to about when I was 24 or so, I was living in Toronto. And I was basically selling my soul. I was working in lobbying for the insurance industry and basically trying to get better legislation passed for, you know, for the insurers. And it was something that, you know, by all metrics, I was being very successful, right? Everyone who I went to school with, they were like, Eric, you made it. You're doing fantastic. But it left me feeling deeply, you know, empty. What am I doing here, right? A deep emptiness of just, I'm selling my soul with this. And so what that then led to was leaving all that. I had a few huge, you know, I was doing the spiritual thing in the background during that time. And I was looking for a way out. And a few big synchronicities happened to me where I was like, okay, this is the universe telling me get out and everything's going to be fine. I'm going to find my path. So I left Toronto. I moved into the woods and and basically just started delving into all the texts that I had not had time to read before. So I dived into the esoteric. I dived into meditative practice. I started getting into nature-based spirituality again. And that eventually led to a few years later, I met my wife, Lauva, on online dating, actually. And she had been heavily involved in shamanism for quite some time before. And we just hit it off. And we had some truly extraordinary spiritual and paranormal experiences very soon after meeting each other. And we eventually found, okay, this is actually our guides initiating us into this path and showing us actually things that were quite scary, but it also showed, hey, this path actually is real. And so we could have, you know, ran from it kicking and screaming, or we could have said, but instead we opted to actually double down and say, okay, this stuff is real. We're not going anywhere. We're going to figure out everything about this. And so that led to the eventual development of the Spirit World Center, where we're taking these practices of shamanism, mediumship, and spirit work, and really creating this cohesive way of interacting with the spiritual realms. And it's been an amazing life since then. So yes, I started off with spirituality, moved into a soul-crushing job, and then moved on to doing what I really want in life and finding my true purpose.
And how long have you had the center open for?
We've been open for 5 years now, actually.
5 years. Wow. And for my listeners, especially my Canadian listeners, can you tell us where you're located?
Yes, we are in Kingston, Ontario at the moment, just north of it.
Still in the woods, pretty much.
We're in cottage country, yeah.
So there was a few things that I was very intrigued by, and I'm going to call you like the buffet here of spirituality, and a few things that really jumped out at me that I feel that my listeners would be interested in, and that's building a relationship with one's spirit guide. So can you tap into that and share with us your thoughts on that for my viewers, my listeners?
Certainly. Yes, I have found that your spirit guides, they really are all around you. And the thing is that there's various levels that they can help and get involved in your life at any time. Mm-hmm. So, for example, you have a guardian spirit. This is a being who is, you can find versions of it in across many traditions, right? So within Judeo-Christian traditions, it's the guardian angel. And within indigenous traditions, it's often called a guardian spirit. Even Norse traditions, like ancient Norse traditions, have this idea of a guardian spirit that's alongside you throughout your life, helping with your fate and helping you out, helping to guide you, right? Just as we have human teachers in life, we also have these spiritual teachers that help us to remember who we truly are while we're dealing with this amnesia of existence. And of course, then we also have all these spiritual guides around us who pop in and out of our lives when we need it, empowering us, guiding us. Things like ancestors, spirits of the land, animal spirits, you know, they're always there around you. But here's the thing, and I find that our guides really respect our free will. And so
if sometimes too much.
Yes, absolutely. And so if they see you there having a bad day and really, you know, not liking your life, they're looking on saying, well, maybe that's just how he's choosing to live his life. Maybe that's what he's doing in this life, right? The experiences he's choosing to have. And the thing is that the moment that you turn that around and reach out to your guides and say, okay, it is my free will and my choice that you are going to become involved in my life. You're going to help me out, right? That they can start, and instantly they can start playing with probabilities. They can start giving guidance. They start showing up in dreams and all these other experiences. And it turns into a really wonderful process. But the key is to allow them into your life. Otherwise, they're kind of spectators off in the distance, right? Yeah, they'll throw you the occasional synchronicity if you're really off track. But as soon as you invite them to start getting involved with you, wonderful things happen. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I find that when there's people that are interested in connecting with their spirit guides, two things. The first thing they want to know is, what do they look like? And then number two is, what's their name? So can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Certainly. I find what they look like, I like to call it co-creation. Often how a spiritual being appears to you, it's not like they have a physical form or some predetermined material form that they can't shift away from. And so often the spirits, they look inside of you. They look at your spiritual vocabulary. They look at how you, what perceives something to you, right? Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And how, what has meaning, what symbols signify anything to you. And then they appear in a way that will make sense to you, right? That you'll be comfortable with, but also has meaning and relevance within your own metaphysical system or understanding of reality. And so it's often that kind of co-creation where they will appear in a way that reflects their own energies, But at the same time, it will reflect your understanding of those energies and of symbolism, right? It's an extreme form of body language in a way, in that we humans, we convey with how we move our bodies, with the way we dress and how we move our bodies, we're conveying some form of communication about ourselves. Mm-hmm. Well, here's the thing, your spiritual guides, they can actually pick the bodies that they appear to you as. So they're doing that next level body language where they're choosing the bodies to convey information to you. And so that's, really cool. And you can get a lot of variation in, mm-hmm. in how any, you know, even if two practitioners are working with the same spiritual being, it might appear to them in two different ways.
Yeah.
And that's totally cool. That doesn't nullify the experience. In fact, it shows, hey, it's this co-creation with them. Regarding their names, I find that can often be kind of the same process, right? They're going to pick a name that has some relevance to you. Often I find that when you're working with your guides, when you're seeking their name, you can engage in a lot of interesting synchronicities to find it. So for example, bibliomancy, right, where you use a book and you turn to a random page to find a name or a word, I find that's an excellent way of
finding. Oh, wow.
Yeah, I've had some amazing synchronicities in finding a name that way. Also random word generators. Mm-hmm. And Wikipedia, random article search, is a really good way of finding a name, actually. They can really play with electronics like that. That name that they have, I find that sometimes it's not so important to know the name of your guides. If you need to know it, it'll be revealed to you
exactly
at some point, right?
Yeah. So, because I've had a lot of people say, I'm trying, I don't seem to get a name. And it's like, well, if you can't get one, then give them one.
Absolutely.
Give them one, right?
For example, the guardian spirit type of being that I was talking about before, often my students, they'll go on a shamanic journey where you basically enter trance while listening to drumming, sending your consciousness into the spirit world. They'll go on their first journey to meet with their guardian spirit, and they'll just feel a presence. Often they won't even see that being, right? Yeah. They'll just get some sense of its energies. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes they don't get a name. Sometimes they don't even see a physical form. And that's totally okay, because guess what? You've made contact. That being is now in your life. You can just meditate and ask for the presence of that guardian spirit to come to you, and it will be there. You don't have to know these details, but they will tend to be revealed to you as you work with that being. Sometimes you're not ready to see it at first.
Exactly.
Sometimes you're not, you know, that guardian spirit might be working with you because of some part of your personality that you're currently suppressing. Maybe it's in your shadow, right? To borrow the Jungian term. And so that you will get a better sense of who that guardian spirit is after you do the work and you realize, actually, you know, I'm incredibly creative, even though I've been repressing this in my entire life. And so this being who I maybe wouldn't have resonated with a month or a year ago is suddenly, wow, I can see them now because I'm living that energy.
Yeah. One of the ways I like to explain it too is, you know, depending on where you are in your life, you are going to receive different guides depending on what you're doing. And so I just like to use the analogy of, pretend you're in high school, grade school, you're going to have a different teacher, a different professor in grade 9, grade 10, grade 11, right? It all depends on where you're at in your life and what you're studying, what you need to know, who's on your path, things like that. And people tend to resonate when I explain it that way. Say, oh, okay, well, that makes sense. It's okay. Well, you now have this all down pat. So let's move on. We're going to bring in another guide for you. And one of my favorite guides, and I always say, I must have a male pervert guide because he always comes across as things will come out of my mouth. And it's like, nope, that wasn't me. That was my guide. I know for sure that was my guide because I feel I have a pretty good sense of humor. And so we need that when it comes to me giving readings. It's like, it doesn't have to be so doom and gloom. So I'm just like, I know I have a joy guide and I know he's a male and I know that he's giving me the words, but seriously, he's not. But still, I like to use that. It's like, we have the joy guide and then we have, you know, our spiritual guide. Do you agree that we have different guides in like in all areas of our life, like maybe like our romance guide or love guide? What's your take on that?
I really feel that that is how it tends to work out. I mean, the being that you're describing there really sounds like a trickster spirit, right? And a trickster is...
But not in an evil way. Not in an evil way, though. We got to make that clear.
Yeah. When you look at mythology and you look at trickster spirits, they're there really to humble the ego. So maybe these jokes that you're making in the session, it's like, this is something you need to hear because you're really doing something silly here and you need to wake up to yourself. So a trickster spirit absolutely has a very important place to play within one's spiritual growth. It really wakes you up to your shadow and your blind spots. And yes, I find that you will tend to have guides that resonate with different parts of your being, but also that resonate with any kind of particular challenges or struggles that you're going through. Guides will come into and leave your life. And often that can be a very sad process. You can be working with a guide for a number of years, and then they're like, hey, you've learned what you need to learn here. And, you know, sometimes there can be tears involved when you let that guide go and you know that you're not going to work with them on a daily basis anymore. But it's part of the path, right? It's bound to happen. But yes, I find especially, you know, even if you don't have a guide set up in a part of your life, you can always ask for one too. So for example,
That's a good one.
Exactly. You know, we'll send you on a shamanic journey where you, as I said, you go into the spirit world and maybe you want more creativity in your life, right? It's not a default state of humanity to always be involved in creativity, but if you want to expand upon that and really develop yourself in that regard, you can go to the spirit world and you can, you know, ask your guardian spirit and say, hey, can you guide me to a being who can take on that mantle, be my creative spirit? And you will get amazing results. You know, you might find an animal spirit, you might find an ancestor, you might find a spirit of the land or a deity and from ancient mythology. All these different possibilities are before you. And so, yes, you can construct quite the spiritual team around you.
I've always felt that I had one of my spirit animals is a wolf. I don't know why. I just sense that. Maybe like a form of, you know, how they say in the wolf pack. Well, I always find that I would like to be the leader of the pack. And then I also feel that there's that protection as well, creating that community and protection. Not sure where to go with that, but that's, I always was always drawn to wolves for some reason. What's your take on that one?
Oh, wolf spirit is an amazing being. Absolutely. Yeah? And yeah, you nailed the energies, you know, bang on. That's, I find that animal spirits are an easy way to get into working with different energies because each animal, they really resonate with particular ways of being, right? So particular energies. I tend to look at energies as patterns of consciousness, habits of consciousness. And so if we look at love, right, that's the attractive force and leadership. It's, you know, going above and beyond and being the selfless leader for others. Animal spirits really convey in quite wonderful ways certain mixes of energy. And so you can absolutely bring those energies into your life. I find that with animal spirits, there's really two ways of using the term animal spirit. So there's animal spirits who are basically ghosts, right? So they're beings who have lived, they've passed on, they might have been on the other side across the veil, living alongside humanity or nature for a bit before passing on to the other world. But that's one type of animal spirit, basically just like a spirit of a human being. But at the same time, you have these archetypal animal spirits. And often in shamanism, that's what we're talking about with an animal spirit, where we're talking about the spirit of all bears, right? So this spirit, this consciousness that basically takes care of and animates the bareness of all bears. And that is a particularly wonderful spirit to work with. Because if you're working with the spirit of, let's say, a particular bear, you might, they have a certain point of view and they have certain interests. So, you know, if you're, let's say, working with an individual wolf spirit, they might say, okay, I'll help you, but you know, you got to leave a stake in the woods because I want that nice energy from the, the stake.
Yes.
And yeah. So, you know, that's perfectly fine to work with them in that way. But when you're working with, let's say, the spirit of all wolves, this archetypal spirit, it will be incredibly happy just to share those energies of wolfness with you, right? They love the fact that a human is manifesting those energies of a wolf through their lives, because that's their entire deal, right? They ensure that the wolfness of wolves stays intact. And so they're happy to give that wolfness on to you as well. And they'll often do it without the need for anything back, right? They're just happy to spread that pattern of being.
Do you want to share with us yours?
Oh, well, I work with quite a few.
Do you?
Wolf spirit, lynx spirit, bear spirit. Oh, who else? Snake spirit as well.
Ooh.
Yeah, a big combination.
Shedding of the skin.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. For self-transformation. We actually, we have a number of different animals that we keep and that we work with in that as embodiments of those energies, right? So we have three snakes and a tortoise. And we basically, when we receive these animals, actually they're almost all rescues, which we like to do. But also it's a wonderful way to basically reach out to that animal spirit and basically say, you know what, I'm going to take good care of this being. And in doing so, I am creating this relationship with you as well. And so, for instance, our snakes, right? We have two ball pythons and a hognose snake. And whenever they shed, right, it's like, okay, we have wonderful skin.
You have them physically there?
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, they have nice little enclosures. They're happy.
Okay.
It's funny. You know, when I first, I tell you, getting a snake is a wonderful way of facing your fears, because we have this innate human drive that when we see a snake, it's like, it's probably poisonous, right? And so the first snake we ever got was the hognose. And it's funny, they actually are mildly venomous. Like, they're not really venomous, but they have these back teeth that they use on any toad or anything that they're trying to take down. And for a human, it's kind of like a bee sting, if you get
bit. Okay.
And so when I first got it, I was very like timid around it. And it's so amazing how animals can really feel your energy. They can react to it.
I agree with that wholeheartedly, because when you said it, you know, being brave or whatever to hold one, I did. I went to Peru and there was this little sanctuary of just a few animals, and there was this mat, there was two of them, I don't know, 20 feet long. One was black and one was kind of yellowish. Anyway, wrapped right around me. I'm like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to connect. I am so going to connect with this snake. And it's just like looking, and you know, I'm just like, I can't believe I'm doing this. Anyway, I got pictures of it, but it just showed me that if you just surrender and trust.
Exactly.
And I wanted to see, can I do this? Can I do this? Right. So I was quite proud of myself.
Good on it.
I do have a question for you. I've been getting a lot of horses. I have never been on a horse ever. And I just feel like now, horses to me represent freedom and strength. So I don't know. I'm just asking your opinion. What do you sense for me? Why am I getting horses coming to me probably within the last, I'm going to say, probably 5 to 6 weeks? I've just been, it has been showing up in my energetic field.
With animal spirits, just like within dreams, I always tell my students that you need to look at what it means to you first. If you have thought or perspective on what it means for you, that's what they're communicating. And so, because ultimately the spirits are communicating with you, they're not communicating with anyone else. And so that, once again, they're looking into your spiritual vocabulary and they're saying, what's this going to mean to this person? Same with dream symbolism.
Yeah.
Whenever someone has a dream, I'm almost always telling them, don't go look up kind of a Jungian dream.
Exactly.
Right.
What does it represent
for
you?
It has its place. Yeah, it has its place. It's very good. Okay. But ultimately, if you have a meaning, that's what's being conveyed. Let's say you see a red cardinal in a dream and you had an experience with your grandmother many years ago where just you see a cardinal and you think of your grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is it's not something you're going to find in a dream dictionary, but it's that is the communication being brought.
Your personal library.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yes. And so in your case, absolutely freedom.
Yeah.
And, you know, connection with herd.
The connection with the horse, like I know it could be probably very, very therapeutic. Mm-hmm. But I also look at it too, is how I felt when I still feel the energy from the film Avatar. Have you seen that one? The first one?
Absolutely. Yes.
Where he makes the connection with the tail, with the horse. And it's just, there's just something in that moment when that scene was shown. I was just like, ooh, there's just something about that connection that I would love to make, but obviously a real horse, right? Compared to the ones in the film. But I just feel like even to the point where there's a retreat up north, mm-hmm. I don't remember exactly where, but I was like, I saw the advertisement for it and it was the same thing. It was like, ooh, maybe this is my opportunity of being able to connect with a horse, but more importantly, getting on top of the horse.
Right. So you're getting that.
Because I've never done it.
You're getting that energy of trust and connection mm-hmm. there, right?
Okay.
Which, yeah, absolutely. No, I would go with that interpretation. Absolutely. If that's okay. What horses mean to you, absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. And you know what's funny? I just remembered right now, not too long ago, I even watched The Horse Whisperer.
There you
ever seen that film?
Mm-hmm. That could have primed you where it's like, okay.
I just got a flash of that right now.
Good way of inviting it into your life.
Yeah.
Absolutely. If you, one of these things where even if an animal spirit doesn't reach out to you initially, if you start studying that animal or going to help it out in some way, mm-hmm. at various rescues or something, it's going to reach back. Absolutely. So that could be what you're encountering.
Love it. Well, I'll keep in touch with you and let you know whenever I get to be able to ride a horse.
Fantastic.
Okay. So moving on, there's another subject that I would love to dabble into, if you wouldn't mind sharing your expertise, your wisdom, your opinion on how to align with your higher self. And of course, some people call it intuition. It's your psychic abilities. When we say higher self, can you share with my audience, what does higher self mean to you?
Certainly. I think that higher self is a good term. And what I feel it's really getting at is the sense of who you truly are, your true mm-hmm. self. It's that really big being on the other side mm-hmm. in the spirit world that is currently dipping a toe into our world. And right now, you're the experience of that higher self in this reality. And so I often, to look at the higher self, I think we have to define also what the body and the mind are. So when we come into this reality, your higher self, this conscious part of you, where it's like, okay, this is the awareness, the one that sees, you know, at the back of the mind, seeing all this going on. The higher self, it's like the user of a computer. And so, you know, when the user sits down at a computer, you have the physical computer, it's like the body, mm-hmm. right? The hardware. Yep. But it also comes with the software, right? It comes with preloaded programs, you know, your mm-hmm. calculator, your web browser.
Yeah.
And that is very much the mind. I don't look at the mind as actually a part of that higher self. It's more like this mental machine that we come built in with as we, you know, take on this mm-hmm. body. Mm-hmm. And of course, the that computer, the software, it's coming with all these kind of instinctual programs. It's coming with programs that were developed from experiences as you lived and that were created as a result of those. And so the mind then can be a little finicky. It can try to be doing so many things at once. But when we engage in, let's say, mindfulness practice, right? Mm-hmm. So the Buddhist mm-hmm. mindfulness practice, one of the first things you find is that the mind never turns off, right? And so with mindfulness practice, you watch as the mind creates these thoughts, and then you don't go down any rabbit hole with these thoughts. You don't anchor yourself to them. You just kind of let them float away, but you just you watch the mind as it works. And so this is very much your higher self, this pure awareness, watching what the mind is doing.
Mm.
Now, one way to look at the higher self is, let's say that your higher self is on a dock, right? Standing on a dock, sitting on a dock, and there's this lake. Now, the place where the higher self is sitting, this world, that's the spirit world, all right? This realm of pure consciousness without time or space and all this. Mm-hmm. But the water that's below is the physical realm, right? This place of matter, mm-hmm. and time and space and division. Now, your higher self keeps dipping its toe in the water, right? It keeps dipping its toe in the physical realm. And for me, that is the cycle of incarnation, where it's like every dipping of that toe, you're getting a body, you're getting a mind, and you're having this experience in the physical world. Now, when we come to questioning, you know, what is our higher self doing here? What does it want? I've found that the higher self very much wants to accomplish certain things in each life, in that it has a pattern, it has a way of being. Your higher self resonates with certain energies. And so each time it has an incarnation, it is trying its best to live that pattern in some mm-hmm. way mm-hmm. in this life. And it's a tough, you know, it's like a game, and it's a very tough game, because you come into this realm and the higher self has amnesia about who it really is. And really the only way to wake up to the very existence of your higher self is through traditional teachings, or by the intervention of your guides, your guardian spirit, mm-hmm, who basically mm-hmm. helps to remind you and say, hey, you're this pure being of light in this body, and you got to remember who you are. Now, when it comes to the higher self pattern, I find that it can really vary, because there's many different energies that higher selves can connect with or that resonate with. And I think this addresses a problem that some spiritual practitioners have when they first get going, mm-hmm. which is they feel like, why isn't everyone trying to attain enlightenment? Why isn't everyone connecting with the spirits? Why isn't everyone, you know? And the thing is that different people have different patterns. So the pattern of your higher self might be to wake up to your to enlightenment, or to mm-hmm. have this connection with the spirit world. But other people, they might have a pattern that says, look, I'm going to live a fulfilling life that deeply makes me happy. If I raise a family, or if I'm just, you know, a farmer taking care of my crops, taking care of my family, or mm-hmm, if I protect my community, these types of patterns are there. And so I look at it as an orchestra. And so all of us who are trying to walk the spiritual path, let's say we're the violin section. Well, you don't want to listen to an orchestra of just violins. Like, maybe you do, I don't know. But it's so much more well-rounded when you have, you know, the brass, when you have the all the other instruments of the orchestra. These are all different patterns that are being played, and together it creates this cohesive whole that can play beautiful music. And mm-hmm. so there is this need to pursue and to figure out your higher self's pattern. And that is going to make you truly happy. When you stop listening to the mind and the ego and the programming of society, and you start to act on that higher self's pattern. Now, when it comes to finding that pattern, and basically I look at it as, you know, finding and connecting with your higher self is essentially the same process as finding your pattern, in that your higher self is constantly guiding you. It is constantly there in the background, trying to get you on track and trying to get you to the things that are right for you. And this is often coming through the intuition. And I look at that as kind of a form of heart-based communication. It's communicating through the heart. It's not communicating through the mind. It's not an intellectual connection. It's coming through the heart. And so often, one of the simplest things in how it communicates is it gives you this feeling of good or bad, you know, this queasiness, oh, I really shouldn't be doing this, or this, oh, this is such the thing I should be doing, right? And it's so curious because, you know, it's this binary way of influencing the body and the mind, right? It's influencing in this binary way, but it can be incredibly powerful in terms of getting the hardware and the software of this computer to do what the higher self wants. It's actually incredibly similar to this new style of programming that they're using to basically teach rat neurons how to play video games. So it's this, they basically take rat neurons, they grow them in a culture, and they then put them on a computer chip. And they then put it in like a remote control car, or they just put it directly connect to a computer game. Like they've taught them how to play Doom. And the way that they train the rat neurons to actually have the right programming to play Doom in the right way, or to control this car through a maze, is that they give them feedback. And the feedback is either something that the neurons like or something that the neurons don't like. So neurons, just like the neurons in our brain, they respond, they like order. And so when they receive an electrical impulse that is ordered, they say, okay, we're doing the right thing. And so we should do more of that. And so this helps them to learn to solve the maze in a certain way, or learn certain habits and behaviors that help them win the video game. Now, the corollary of that is that when the neurons do something that the programmer doesn't like, they give it a chaotic electrical frequency. So just think of it as like, you know, random noise that just doesn't feel good, right? Mm-hmm. And so the neurons are like, no, we should not do any more of that. So this, in the exact same way, I feel, through this binary impulse, is how the higher self is acting to try to tame and get the body and the mind to do what the higher self wants to accomplish in this life. And that's really the one trick that the higher self has. It really is there, you know, it's their consciousness. It's there witnessing everything that's going on with the body and the mind. But it can influence how the body and the mind are navigating this world by, in essence, giving us those good and bad feelings. So it's really a process of taming then the mind as you try to connect more and more with the higher self, as you try to bring yourself in line with that pattern of the higher self. I often look at it as, you know, a farmer and an ox, right? So the farmer is the higher self. The ox is the mind slash ego. And the farmer is trying to get this ox to pull a plow, right? To plow on and, you know, take care of the fields. Well, the ox at first is just, you know, doing anything it wants, right? It's having fun in the field. It's running around. It's like, how dare you put a plow on me? It's very, very independent. And at that point, the higher self really can't do much because the mind is just operating as though the person is asleep, right? As Gurdjieff said, people, they go through this life like they're asleep, and they're operating on these pre-existing programs, right? Instinct. They're operating on all the, you know, the protective behaviors and programming they had throughout their childhood and growing up, and also what they've learned from society and from culture. Now, that ox will tend to hit a period, will come to a time in its life when it realizes that all these behaviors that's been doing have not been bringing it to happiness, right? It is suffering in so many ways. And I find this is the main time when the higher self can get involved, because then that sense comes through. And often, you know, a person who's gone to that black night of the soul, dark night of the soul, turns to ancient texts or turns to a spiritual teacher and basically says, what do I do to get rid of this emptiness? And in that moment when the ox or the mind has realized, I'm really not happy right now. Suddenly that window of opportunity opens up when it says, okay, here's a way to be happy. Find your pattern, connect with your higher self, connect with something bigger than yourself to try to turn away from all these egoic pleasures and distractions and turn towards things that will really make you happy. And at that point, then the ox will allow itself to pull the plow. And suddenly you have this connection between the ox and the farmer, and they're able to do something productive. Now, it's a long process for that. And often you can just kind of have this split in the mind where part of you knows, okay, I really shouldn't be watching so much TV. I really shouldn't be drinking so much, all of this, right? And knows that. And so it's ready to identify with that higher self, to seek that higher self pattern. But let's say 90% of the mind is still focused on having these egoic pleasures. Well, then it's this long process of slowly recovering more and more of the mind from the ego and turning it to the higher self. It can take a long time. Often one of the key things that you have to do as a practitioner to make that happen is to let the ego know it's safe. Because so many of these patterns, right, whether it's overeating, whether it's being defensive or aggressive, these come from a feeling of not being safe. I might run out of food, and so I have to eat now. I need to protect myself from others, right? Often from experiences in early life or primal instincts. You know, I mean, the food impulse, that comes from literally living in areas where you had to eat all you can now because there might not be food tomorrow. And so you let the ego know it's safe. When it knows it's safe, it can finally start to switch over to, okay, I'm going to identify and connect with that higher self, because I know that's going to bring me a deep sense of meaning and happiness in my life and contentment. And so, yeah, it starts off, you know, a small part of the mind is ready to be joined with and operating on behalf of the higher self. And then eventually you get more and more. I would say it's a long process if you want to get to that 100%. But if you can even get to a point where the majority of your mind is turned to working with the higher self, you're doing really good.
Wow. That was a whole lot to unpack there.
Yeah, that was an info dump. Sorry about that.
No, it's a great. I love the analogy about with the ox and the farmer. Like that's a perfect example. And my question to you regarding all of that is, you know, when you say mindfulness, what practice do you use? Because I remember years ago, in order to practice like a mindfulness meditation, and like you said, there's so much noise, there's so much going on, is I did a class, I think it was through a yoga class, a yoga studio, and they had us do chocolate and to really like put that piece of chocolate in your mouth and you're focusing everything about that chocolate and you're in that moment. Like, what does it taste like? Is there any spices in this? How does it feel as it's melting? Things like that. Do you have any suggestions as for a mindfulness meditation or any other ways of practicing mindfulness?
Absolutely. Yes, there's so many different kinds of mindfulness. And I think this is another issue that people might come across, right? They hear mindfulness and it's like, which one? Really? I can't remember the name of it. It's an old scroll. I think it's It's an early Buddhist scroll. And it has like literally 50 different types of mindfulness meditation that you can engage in, ranging from walking meditation, right, where you're walking and you're very aware of any thoughts arising, but also aware of the present moment. As you're saying, the focusing on eating, that's a huge one. I find that really it brings about so much more enjoyment when you eat, right? We often, you know, scarf it down.
And
we don't taste our food. And so there's so many benefits from that. There's other mindfulness forms that maybe you wouldn't want to engage in. So for example, in that text, there's one for going into a cemetery and being mindful of your dread, being mindful of the thoughts that arise in the presence of death, right? So there's a very large gamut of types of mindfulness meditation. But one that I tend to like to do is, as I was saying before, just kind of closing the eyes and just being the observer. And you let the mind do what the mind does. It's a misnomer in meditation, I find, when people are saying, okay, empty the mind. Because the mind is never empty, right? You cannot turn off the mind.
I totally agree.
And this is why, you know, the only time that your mind is going to be truly empty is if you're dead, basically, you know? And
pretty much.
So the mind always has to be doing something. And this is why so many meditative traditions have you focusing the mind on something. You might be doing chant. You might be doing a mantra. You might be
breathing
on,
techniques.
Yeah. You might be focusing on a posture that you're maintaining or a geometric figure that means some spiritual teaching. There's always going to be something you're focusing on, right? And so, yeah, having said that, a mindfulness technique for me is that I like to use is just closing those eyes, letting the mind do what minds do, and you're just watching. You're not getting emotionally attached or following any thoughts down any rabbit holes. And so the mind will have a thought, you see it, you acknowledge it, you know, oh, that's a nice thought. And then you just kind of let it drift off. And, you know, your mind will go through a lot of processes. One of the best things that can emerge, though, from this form of mindfulness is that you really see, okay, that mind is something separate from me. You know, it's this separate engine of thoughts that is very useful, right? It's, I think we often get really down on the ego, right? Oh, the ego, the mind, it's such a terrible thing. Look at what it's doing. I need to destroy my ego. And you really don't want to destroy the ego because it is what keeps you alive. It keeps you safe. And so even the behaviors that you find might not be beneficial to you. Many of these egoic behaviors, they emerge from that early time in the human experience where we were living very precarious lives. And so these ego behaviors were there to keep you alive. Things like aggressiveness, things like eating everything you can get so that you don't starve tomorrow, being constantly thinking about sexuality because that's how your genes are passed on, right? And so the ego is not trying to hurt you. It's not trying to, it just doesn't know any better. And it feels that it's trying to protect you and keep you safe. And this is why I was saying that if you can let the ego know that you're safe, it says, okay, my number one priority is to protect you. I've been doing these things to protect you. Now you're telling me that I'm safe, so I can stop doing those things. And so this is how you tame that ego. You bring it to your cause. So never try to destroy your ego. You're gonna end up brain dead after some terrible psychedelic trip. It's not good. Okay. Don't try to destroy your ego. Work with it. It's your friend.
It's your friend.
You just have to communicate. It's all about communication.
I think we should give our egos a name.
I like
that. What do you think
of that? Absolutely.
What do you think of that?
Well, it actually is a good practice. I have actually done that.
Really?
And what it does is it helps you to create that sense of separateness between you and the ego. That's not just part of Eric or Helen. It is this external protector / you can turn it into a positive friend.
Yes.
And yeah, it's useful.
Yes, I like that. I'm going to have to contemplate what name I'm going to give my ego.
Well, one way to do it, which is what I've done, is that actually I just continue to say, okay, the ego is Eric, right? Because before you wake up, when you're in this, what Gurdjieff would have called that sleep, you are just the ego. Right. So that name that you're given when you came into this world really does identify with that being who you were before. Now, and this is why in so many mystical lodges and magical societies and stuff like the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn and the Rosicrucians, they will have you pick a magical name a name that reflects who you want to be. And so if you can then identify with that, that higher principle encompassed in that name, that helps you to, one, work with, you know, you, I like Eric. I was Eric for a long time. I'm not going to be mad at Eric, but I'm going to work with them. And at the same time, you know, my new name that I work with in my spiritual practice is this, and it represents me moving towards that higher ideal.
I like that. Really like that. Now, is there anything that you want to share with my audience?
Oh, that's a big question. Let's see. Well, it's a very open-ended question. Do we cover everything you wanted to cover so far? I guess we did.
Well, I was thinking of that in the back of my mind, less with my ego, but I was thinking that I would like to save some subjects for another podcast, because you, again, you're like a buffet here, that there's so many things I want to tap into.
Sure.
And definitely when it has to do with the spirit realm. So we did cover quite a bit.
I do even mention some. If you need a closing,
go ahead, jump in.
All right. So one of the most important things I find on the spiritual path is to just find a practice and get involved in it. So I like to advocate to urge people to not engage in what I like to call information paralysis. On the spiritual path, it's a wonderful time that we live in, where we have access to all of the world's information literally in our pocket, right? We can pull out our smartphone and read texts that were written thousands of years ago that contain wonderful information. And at the same time, there's so many paths to explore and different even sets of techniques and traditions to explore. And what that can lead to is to become an armchair spiritual practitioner, right? Where you are constantly reading and you're trying to use your reason and your logic to work through these paths, understand everything about them, and because you're trying to find what the right path is for you, right? So I'm comparing practice A to practice B. I want to know everything about it. I'm using reason to say, well, I actually prefer A to be over this, and they contradict over that. What I would say is you really cannot understand a spiritual path without actually doing it and having those experiences.
Practice. Yeah.
The firsthand experience of these things encompasses a type of understanding and knowledge about these practices that is not in how it was written down, the text. Often these texts are written by one practitioner for another. Mm-hmm. And so they're written in language that can be understood across people. Different people have had this experience. But if you've not had that experience, you're never really going to know what they're talking about. And so there's that. You want to connect with that firsthand experience, but also you're never going to be to know if a practice is right for you unless you start it. And if you don't start, you're going to be stuck in that information paralysis, and you can spend 30, 40 years just reading, becoming a great academic on this stuff, but actually having made zero spiritual progress. So absolutely find a path. You know, you don't have to stop reading, but find a path and start walking. And you can always go on a different path later. Mm-hmm. It's not like you have to walk that path for the rest of your life, but that will give you the insights and the experience that you need to grow spiritually and also to find what your true path actually should be. So get practicing, people.
Get practicing, living it and experiencing it. Absolutely. And you do a lot of teachings out of your center, the Spirit World Center. Do you hold like retreats there as well?
Everything we do is online. We teach really a multifaceted approach. So something that we take very important is to connect with those spirits, right? And so our courses that we teach are connecting for different purposes. The core techniques that we're doing across all these different programs is really encompassed by trance journeying or shamanism, where you're basically sending your consciousness to the other side.
I like that.
And then mediumship and intuitive development. And also spirit work, where you are doing sacred ceremonies and such to work with and empower and create that connection with your spiritual guides.
Oh, I love that.
And so we have one program, Spirit Communication for Spiritual Practitioners. So if you're a Reiki practitioner or any kind of sound healer, you can take that course to basically expand and create that channel and that connection with your guides so that you can be empowered even greater in your healing modality. We also have a shamanic apprenticeship. It's 3 years long. Ooh. And you delve deep, you make a lot of personal transformation, and you learn to work with your entire spiritual team. You learn how to address things like power loss and soul loss and really heal yourself, because you know, the work of a shaman, it's the wounded healer, right? That you, that you have had trauma, you've had negative experiences and things you have to heal from. By healing yourself of these things, you can then help someone else.
Exactly.
Because you have that firsthand insight. And then, of course, we also teach a workshop series, three-part workshop series, for people who want to incorporate some shamanic practices into their Reiki or energy healing practice. And so we teach things that can empower and complement what they're already doing. So yes, we have all that at the spiritworldcenter.com.
Now, is most of your classes, are they in person, or do you do online as well on Zoom?
All online,
or is it through all Zoom. Online?
A lot of individualized stuff.
Yes. Perfect. So a lot of my listeners who are in the US, across the pond, then they can do it that way. I love that.
Absolutely. They're all more than welcome.
Yeah. I'm excited. Tomorrow night, I'm doing a cacao ceremony.
Oh, lovely.
Really huge heart opener. So I'm really, and I love the meditation, and it also comes with the sound bath, and that's my favorite. Anything that entails a sound bath, just take me away. This is, I'm just super, super excited about that for tomorrow. So that's what I love. I do. I'm that person that really likes to, like, we're always learning when it comes to spirituality. We're always, always learning. I don't, you know, I say I'm a teacher. I say, you know, I do mediumship and do that. But I also say, but I'm also a student. I'll always be a student. Right. I'm like that sponge. I just want to know more, 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 but more about myself as well, helping me to remember who I am and going through all my lessons in life and then sharing that. You know, you learn the lessons, like, okay, I'm not going to do that again. And then the universe always sends me clients who have just, who are going through what I just went through.
It's funny.
Right. It's just so serendipity. And it's like, funny enough, I just went through that. Right. And so I love how the universe just plays and sends us the right people, you know, and I'm so honored and blessed that, you know, you came my way into my world, and here you are from the spirit world in the physical realm. Right. So, but I would love to have you back, because like I said, you're a buffet of such many, many knowledges and wisdom, especially the shamanism. I haven't really studied a lot of that, and I'm sure I must have some listeners out there that would be intrigued more.
Oh, so, I'd love to dive into that with you. Absolutely. We can dive into shamanism.
So what is your website?
Oh, it's spiritworldcenter.com. And
very,
it's center is spelt the American way with the ER at the end. So
had to put that one in there. True. With the ER. Well, I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. I learned a lot. I loved how we just did so many different little subjects. And again, I hope my listeners, well, I don't hope, I know that they will enjoy this conversation that we had. And I look forward to having you back.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure being here with you today. And I look forward to the next time.
Until then, I'll see you on the other side.